In radio, it's RCA all the way. The Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Magic Key turns. RCA Victor, Radio Marine, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company, the great family of RCA, sends you a full hour of entertainment from coast to coast. On this anniversary of our nation's independence, the Magic Key turns to a special 4th of July program featuring Bobby Breen and Marion Clare in scenes from the forthcoming picture, Make-A-Wish, written by Gertrude Berg. Irvin S. Cobb, favorite American humorist. Edwin Franco Goldman and his famous band, John B. Kennedy visiting the Boy Scout Jamboree in Washington, the Revelers, radio's great quartet, and Frank Black and the Magic Key Orchestra, which opens the program with the Habanera and Vaquero song from Victor Herbert's opera, Natoma.
Radio has developed through the years its own constellation of stars. Brilliant in the Field of NBC Celebrities is the name of an outstanding organization familiar to a million loudspeakers. This fine group, which is composed of Robert Simmons, Elliot Shaw, Wilfred Glenn, and Lewis James, finds itself in a familiar setting today, in a sort of reunion in Radio City. For the man who had much to do with their success as coach, arranger, and accompanist is at the piano again. The magic key turns to the Revelers Quartet with Frank Black. Mr. Black presents the Revelers in one of his own splendid arrangements. The merry-go-round broke down.
Oh, the farmer was in the dell. Oh, the farmer was in the dell.
We don't know what he was doing down there
when the merry-go-round broke down. As we went round and round, each time twould miss, we'd steal a kiss while the merry-go-round went.
Revelers bring you a song they helped make famous in the early days of radio. My Lindy Lou.
Honey, did you hear that mockingbird sing last night?
Hear him sing last night.
Oh, Lord, he was singing so sweet in the moonlight,
in the moonlight.
In the old magnolia tree, touching his heart with melody. I know, oh, he was singing of you, my Lindy Lou, Lindy Lou. Oh, Lord,
I lay right down and die.
If I could sing like that bird sing to you, my little Lindy Lou. Lindy, did you smell that honeysuckle? It was smelling so sweet in the moonlight,
in the moonlight.
it's God he loves it so. Honey, that's the way I love you, my Lindy Lou, Lindy Lou, oh Lord.
I'd lay right down and die if I could be as sweet as that to you, my little Lindy Lou. Oh.
To startled citizens in towns of the Eastern Seaboard, it seemed this past week that it really had happened here. Every boat, every train, every bus brought its squads of khaki-clad youth to tumble out eager for adventure. Timid souls were soon put at ease by the information that what was really happening was a Boy Scout jamboree, and all roads led to Washington, the scene of a great international scout encampment. The magic key of RCA turns to John Boy Scout Jamboree encampment at Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon, all. Riding under a bright July the 4th sky, you would be startled by the air view of Washington. The national capital looks as if it has capitulated to an invading army. As a matter of fact, it has. To an army of Boy Scouts from every county in the country and from many foreign lands at the first big American 10-day jamboree. 25,000 boys, their average age 15, at $25 a head, are camped in a canvas city of thousands of khaki tents supplied by the Army. Everything is organized for their comfort. The city of boys is self-contained from pup tents to hospital. Although, fortunately, there's been little use for the hospital. Here at the NBC tent in the Court of the Nations, we have a panorama from Washington's piercing monument over the broad reflecting pool before the chase white beauty of the Lincoln Memorial, its fountains pouring silver at the sun. Armies of scouts in bright scarves of red and blue and gold go through inspection led by mature scout masters. Flags of the nations fly, from the cool blue cross of Denmark to the green of Iraq, which seems to have borrowed its national color, if not its national name, from Ireland. Over there is a huge arena where all the shows take place, and I see an exact replica of the President's country home in Hyde Park, built by Boy Scouts. And in the northwestern states area, a huge statue of Paul Bunyan, the great logger who was also a great liar. Ranging alphabetically, and since the Bulgarian and Belgian boys have escaped me so far, I'll introduce a youngster from Canada. Bright-eyed Gavin Brown of Ottawa. What has the jamboree meant for you Canadian boys, Gavin?
It's been swell, but we started wrong.
How was that, Gavin?
When we got off the train to Washington, we piled into what we thought was a bus, but it wasn't.
What was it, Gavin?
It was a police patrol wagon.
Well, nonetheless, all swell that ends swell, Gavin. Here's Chowchun Yang from faraway Hangzhou, China. So, Yang, you came a long way. For what?
Don't call me Mister, call me Yan. I came to bring our greetings to brother scouts in America.
Well, from what I just overheard of your conversation with Monsieur Henri Davenant of Paris, he agrees with you. That so, Monsieur?
Yes, you have in America a very practical scouting, as the marvelous exhibits of handicraft at the Jamboree show me. I am taking very fine impression back to France.
Yes, and you are also taking away some very fine scouts. About 900 of the crowd here will go to Holland for the World Jamboree. Armando Montero from Santiago, Chile, is among them. Aren't you, Armando?
I was not, but I am going to be after the good time I have had here.
Well, to complete our miniature League of Nations, including the Scandinavian, there's this lass, Zikonski of Warsaw, Poland.
It's not that way, but this way my name is Jekoinski.
Oh, I see. The D is silent as in donut. Well, you'll be in Holland, too. Likewise, this braw Scot without his kilt just now, Edward A. Chisholm from Glasgow, Scotland.
Yes, I'll be there with my kilt on, too.
And how will you greet one another when you all meet again? In 10 different tongues, that means howdy, Scout, and the scouting slogan, be prepared. You've heard music, scout music perhaps, and survived it. Here's the smallest scout musician in America. Nelson Hosking, of Martins Ferry, Ohio, bringing from his covered wagon tent his toe fight. Play it, Nelson. Well, what does that mean?
That's the call to eat.
Oh, I see. Yes, they do a lot of that here. Each scout gets 3 square meals a day with the corners knocked off. And here's the boy with the best appetite of all, Bob Aiken of Joplin, Missouri.
Well, I like to eat.
Well, it's more or less necessary, but how often do you do it, Bob?
Oh, first thing in the morning. Then I drill and go someplace like the Bureau of Standards or the Patent Office. Then I eat again.
And I hear you're a bear at the swap exchange.
Oh, the southern boys are the best traders.
The swap exchange, ladies and gentlemen, is this jamboree's equivalent to Wall Street. The boys swap everything. One kid started by swapping a horned toad for a harmonica and wound up with a baby alligator. Quotations at close of the market last night were 2 horned toads for 1 alligator with no bids. The dinner flags are unfurling over 20 huge mess tents, and since they've been honoring Eagle Scouts, Sea Scouts, and Master Scouts, I'm picking out somebody different. A dollar prize for the most unpopular scout of all.
My name is Herbert Stern of Marischal, New York, and I'm the bugler who blows reveille.
Well, what does that do, Herbert?
To wake them all up in the morning.
Hey, you can't get away with that. I deserve that prize. I'm Scotty Wilson from Wichita, Kansas, and I wake the bugler up.
Oh, well, Scotty, I wonder who wakes you up. And that isn't all to wonder at here, where we see the youth of our country and of the world, gathered in harmony and useful progress. When Baden-Powell conceived his idea of the Boy Scouts, it was in the stern siege of Mafeking during the Boer War. Seeing how well these boys manage when their older statesmen seem to mess things up, we might let the boys run international affairs. They might do better. They couldn't do much worse. Here we have evidence of the natural bond between boys of different race and color and creed. Boy Scouting is a bond of peace and friendliness, needed indeed in days of war and rumors of war. For if before airplanes and poison gas and submarines, Sherman could say that war was hell, what would he call it now? The magic key of RCA returns you to New York City.
To shirt-sleeved thousands on the Mall in Central Park in New York City, and to radio millions across America in summer, Edwin Franco Goldman brings the inspiration of the greatest band music in the world. Dr. Goldman has made his music the national summer tonic for weary souls who like the smell of earth, see the stars, and tingle to stirring themes. For a special 4th of July presentation, the Magic Key of RCA turns to Edwin Franco Goldman and his famous band. Dr. Goldman has chosen as his first offering the playing of the finale of the overture to William Tell. Thank you. Edwin Frankel Goldman directs his famous band in a favorite composition, an outstanding hit with his listeners everywhere. We hear his fine arrangement of American Patrol. Thank you.
National Broadcasting Company has completed plans to enlarge its current broadcasting season by bringing its listeners an additional share of the rich musical fare to be offered here and abroad. From across the water, international concerts to be heard will come from Salzburg, Linz, Bayreuth, Paris, Vienna, Warsaw, Rome, and other cities. At the great Salzburg Festival in Austria, some of the most distinguished conductors and soloists in the world will gather for more than a month of music. Arturo Toscanini and Bruno Walter are among the conductors who will participate. And the famous soloists will include Lotte Lehmann, Ezio Pinza, Charles Kullmann, Kerstin Torborg, and Ida Norina of the Metropolitan Opera. The broadcast will begin on July 24th and be scheduled regularly through to August 21st, during which time the National Broadcasting Company will bring you, among other operas, Fidelio, The Magic Flute, Falstaff, and Die Meistersinger. From this side of the water, broadcasts will feature such musical treats as the Berkshire Musical Festival in August, the Chautauqua, New York concerts in July and August, the Robin Hood Dell concerts from Philadelphia, now heard regularly on the air, the Grant Park Chicago concerts, the Interlochen concerts from Michigan in July, and from the Pacific Coast, the Elizabeth Sprague Coolidge Chamber Music Series in July, and the Bach Brandenburg Concertos in August.
Specially made by Frank Black for the Magic Key Orchestra. Talking Through My Heart from the picture Big Broadcast of 1937.
In Hollywood, where nothing is spared to bring you fine pictures, they're talking of a forthcoming movie called Make-A-Wish. This principal productions picture, produced by Sol Lesser, sprang from the clever pen of Gertrude Bird and stars Bobby Breen and Marion Clare. We hear now how the story of that production came to life and some of the music Oscar Strauss wrote for the picture. The magic key of RCA turns to Bobby Breen, Marion Clare, and Gertrude Berg in Hollywood, California.
Thank you. This is Gertrude Berg in Hollywood. I would like to tell you how the story came to life, but a story doesn't begin to live until it gets into the hearts of an audience who likes it, and until the actors make the story come true. So I think little Bobby Breen can tell you so much more about Make-A-Wish than I can. Bobby, did you like making Make-A-Wish?
You bet I did. Because it was great fun. I like being Chip Winters. And your story, Miss Berg, began where all good stories should begin. School was over, and Chip Winters was on his way to Birch Lake Camp in the Maine woods. You remember when all the boys get off the train and hike up to camp and we sing our camp song? Well, I really meant it.
Yes, Miss Berg. How do you like being Bobby's mother in the picture and learning that the letters you wrote to your son inspired John Selden, the composer?
It made me want to live up to the character I was supposed to be. I knew my part of the story had begun when John Selden, who lived at the music colony across the lake from the boys' camp, sent me his unusual gift through Chip.
And it was a very unusual gift because you could give it away and still have it.
Then give it away again, Bobby, to all our friends. Then I met John Selden, and I liked him. It was only when Chip and I returned to New York with Mr. Mays, the man I was supposed to marry, that I knew I loved John Selden. But by then he had gone off disappointed and hurt because I refused to sing in the operetta he had written for me. He was gone, but his music remained.
I'll hear a thousand
talking about the three funny batmen who steal Mr. Selden's third act?
Then we'd have to tell how you saved Mr. Selden's third act, and I don't think we have time enough for that.
Well, then will there be time enough for you to tell us what part of the story you like, Molly Goldberg? Oh, I'm sorry. I never think of you as Gertrude Berg, only as Molly Goldberg.
That's all right, darling. Even when I was writing Make-A-Wish, Molly Goldberg kept looking over my shoulder and whispering the things that Gertrude Berg must never keep out of anything she ever does. So maybe we should let Molly Goldberg tell you the part of the story she likes best.
Please.
Do you want me to, Gertrude Berg? I do, Molly. Well, then, I think the part of the story I like best is the story of John Selden's operetta. The story about the Lady of the Hills that lives high upon a magic mountain. And she wanders and wanders through the hills singing a song. But her song cannot be heard by everyone. Only those who are pure in heart can see her and hear her. And who are the pure of heart in the world below? Children. So the children hear her song and follow her up into the hills to the magic mountain, just like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Remember? And the story goes on further and tells how the children will only be able to go back to the world below when some good man comes along, good enough to see her and hear her song. And one day he does come and hears her and sees her and follows her. They fall in love, the spell is broken, and the lady and the good man and all the children bring their happiness down into the world below. So you see, Bobby, everybody thinks they can find happiness only far away, maybe upon a magic mountain. But if they only knew, they would look in their hearts. Yes, if people would only listen to the music in their hearts, our lives, I think, would be like a song. And the world would be, how shall I say it? The world would be full of harmony.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Shall we make a wish?
Mm-hmm.
Let's all make a wish for it to come true.
Magic Key returns you to New York City.
Push a button, there's your station. Ladies and gentlemen, with that simple statement, RCA Victor gives you an entirely new conception of radio tuning. Push a button, there's your station. That's all there is to it with this sensational new development from radio headquarters. RCA Victor introduces electric tuning for the first time. And at a price you can afford to pay. On the new 1938 RCA Victor electric tuning models, there are 8 buttons labeled with the call letters of any 8 stations you select. To get the program you want, just push a button and the electric tuning mechanism brings you that station tuned to perfection. To get another station, push another button and so on. And now, simultaneously with electric tuning, RCA Victor for 1938 brings you still greater listening luxury in armchair control. an inexpensive attachment for the electric tuning models that enables you to tune electrically at a distance from the radio. Imagine yourself seated in your favorite chair, on the porch, or in another room with the compact armchair control box at your elbow. To change from program to program, just push a button, and there's your station. Nor are electric tuning and armchair control the only marvels in the brand new RCA Victor radios for 1938. There's the new overseas dial to make tuning for shortwave stations as easy as domestic. The new Sonic Arc Magic Voice for radio's clearest, most lifelike tone. RCA Victor Beauty Tone Cabinet and a host of other features that will thrill and delight you. See these new RCA Victor radios at your dealers tomorrow and be one of the first to push a button. There's your station. To Frank Black and the Magic Key Orchestra, bringing you the infectious rhythms of a tango, Como y Obligo. In the Laugh Belt, that fabulous section of the United States extending from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Canada to the Rio Grande, the folks think very highly of a certain southern gentleman who was born in Paducah, Kentucky. That certain gentleman has been known to melt the heart of a tax collector, give that stern old lady from Dubuque hysterics, and to generally lay customers in the aisle. The Magic Key of RCA turns to America's favorite humorist, Irvin S. Cobb in Hollywood.
You know, I'm glad to be in this nice, quiet studio instead of out in the great open spaces where fireworks are going off prematurely and on purpose and under people. Nighttime, though, is when things will really warm up and, oh, Say, can you see by the rocket's red glare whether Uncle Horace's eyebrows are still there? There's always an Uncle Horace. He takes charge of the doing so the little ones won't get hurt and goes around the next 2 weeks done up in white bandages until he looks like a week's wash. And he smells like the official celebration of Horse Liniment Week. Dear old Uncle Horace, a burnt offering on the altar of liberty. I'm getting past the age, though, and I really enjoy getting tangled up in sizzling Roman candles till they think I'm part of the big goodnight set piece. It's all right to say, ah, the way everybody does when the gold sparks shower down, but it's no fun if you're the party who suddenly changes the harmonious chorus by going, ouch. But in my youth, I believe the day should be celebrated, if necessary, with personal blisters. For me, the birth of independence marched hand in hand with the arnica bottle. It's a wonder sometimes I survived the glorious fourth to the convalescent fifth. And I was always thinking up whimsical notions for putting the neighbors in the proper spirit to really appreciate freedom. I'd get them up before sunrise so they could put in 18 hours appreciating. I couldn't have been more than 12 years old, but very bright for my age. When I arose at 4:30 a.m. one July 4th and borrowed my uncle's double-barrel shotgun without mentioning the matter to Uncle, and loaded it to the muzzle and let go right under the bedroom window of old Mr. Fergus McPherson, who lived next door, and he bulged out in his nightshirt just as I went over the alley fence and yelled out that he'd give $5 cold cash for a chance to skin me alive. You can figure what an attractive little fella I was when a gentleman who had the reputation of being sort of saving would jump up out of a sound sleep to offer that much money merely for my pelt, can't you? Another time, everybody went out to Fisher's Grove for a picnic lunch, first picking the red ants out of the custard pie, or if it seemed more convenient, picking the custard pie out of the red ants, and as usual, some greenhorn had to make the mistake of sitting down in a bosky dell. Amateurs should keep out of the bosky dell business until they learn where the bosky dell leaves off and the poison ivy starts, but the main event was hearing Judge Hopper read the Declaration of Independence. The judge would speak anywhere on any subject at the drop of the hat, and he carried a self-dropping hat for that purpose. And when it came to spouting at public banquets, well, the only way to avoid meeting Judge Hopper at dinner in our town was to eat at an owl wagon. Well, the judge was just getting in a weaving way, reading that declaration and orchestrating the long words when a certain carefree lad, I being the same, touched off one of those big quart-sized giant crackers right under him. And when the judge came back down again, which he did after soaring quite a way up in the air, he merged into a flood of language which wasn't in the immortal document as originally written. Or if it was, the founders of this republic ought to have been ashamed of themselves. Now, last year, seeking peace and quiet, I went out sailing in a one-piece bathing suit, you know, sort of dressed at half-mast. That is an era. Because I sunburned until all that I needed before being served was to have the gravy thickened with a little flour and somebody to tuck a sprig of watercress behind my ear. A well-done sirloin steak had nothing on me. It may taste good, but I found out that it hurts like the dickens, however. And coming home, I held up traffic. People kept mistaking my face for a stop signal. But when I tried to smile, everybody said I looked more like an old-fashioned red brick colonial mantle. And I peeled for 2 weeks like the wallpaper in an Ohio Valley parlor after the flood. I sort of glad then when the chance came to hide here today and tell a little story about Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who started the sea trip on the 3rd, so their little son Willie, age 6, would be out of danger when the explosion started on the 4th. It is the first sea voyage for any of the Jones family, and the weather was bad, it always is, and the sea was rough, it always is. Willie, being but a tiny tot, wasn't seasick. He just frolicked about and glad cries and got underfoot and got in people's way and was the life of the ship. He circulated so fast he seemed to be a host or a multitude. The ship was right foggy with him. Wherever you looked, you seemed to see a blur of Willie's. On the second day out, his parents dragged themselves up on deck. If they must die, and that seemed probable, they'd die in the open air rather than in a stuffy stateroom where you had to take soundings. And some stewards carried them to some steamer chairs and sheltered place and eased them down and covered them with rugs and left them to suffer together. Miss Jones was the color of old sage cheese, you know, pale yellow with green streaks in it. But Mr. Jones looked more like the underneath side of a nickel watermelon. After a while, Miss Jones happened to turn her head, which was aching till she expected to fall off any minute, and her horrified gaze beheld something which any other time would have caused her to leap up and rush to the rescue. For 20 feet away, little Willie had climbed up on the guard, and he was balanced on tiptoe on a slippery wet rail with one little finger clutched in a steel guy and one little foot waving over the bounding billows of the angry ocean. She tried to get up, but she couldn't make it. She was too far gone. And she tried to cry out, but her voice issued forth only as a thin, weak wheeze, something like this. Willie. Oh, Willie. And then she clutched at her husband. Oh, Henry, she whispered desperately. Speak to Willie. For heaven's sake. And his sick eyes followed where her finger pointed, and he said, "Hello, Willie." Thanks.
The magic key turns now, taking you back to New York.
Every nation has its martial airs. There is always one marching song which becomes the favorite of the crowd. In America, we have a song that can bring a tingle to the spine with the best of them. Join with Edwin Franco Goldman and his band, Frank Black and his Magic Key Orchestra, the Revelers Quartet, 77 men, as the Magic Key of RCA turns to the entire studio ensemble and the people of America singing and playing The Stars and Stripes Forever.
Thank you.
May we remind you again, the most up-to-the-minute radio reception means RCA Victor electric tuning. Push a button, there's your station.
The members of the family of RCA, RCA Victor, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, and the National Broadcasting Company, invite you to tune in at this same time next Sunday for a full hour of entertainment presented for your interest and pleasure by the Radio Corporation of America. At that time, we will present Suzanne Fisher, soprano of the Metropolitan Opera, a special hot weather visit to Iceland, Jean Seblon, romantic young French singing star, Shep Fields and his rippling rhythm orchestra, an amusing return in song and story to the Gaslit era, and Frank Black and the Magic Key Orchestra. Milton Cross speaking for all the services of the Radio Corporation of America.
And Ben Grauer saying, in radio, it's RCA all the way.
This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.